Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to the panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce the group to you, and then we'll get started. We've got a lot to talk about. Joining us for the panel this morning at WAMC's Alan Chartok. Morning, Alan.
Hi, Joe. Always good to be in your presence.
Well, sure. And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is with us. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, Joe. Always good to be in your presence.
And the Director of the Journalism Program at UAlbany, Rosemary Armeo.
And I am plainly in the presence of greatness.
Well, very nice to have you all here. A reminder that if you want to join in and be a part of our discussion, and why wouldn't you, it's panel, P-A-N-E-L, panel at WAMC.org. We'll just get this out of the way. To the surprise of probably no one, Donald Trump clinched the presidency Monday as members of the Electoral College cast ballots, declaring him the victor, a perfunctory conclusion to the most stunning presidential contest in modern history. Trump became the winner Monday afternoon after electors from Texas cast their ballots and put him over the 270 electoral votes needed to win. Results will officially be announced January 6th in a special joint session of Congress. With all of the talk of people changing their votes and with all of the protests and rallies taking place of state capitals across the country, very little change in there was a few, but very little change in what people the electors went in and for the most part did what they were supposed to do.
Hey, Joe, I get it. We've heard from a lot of people who are very angry and who really were making a last-ditch effort to suggest that the electors would rise up and say no to Trump. And Rosemary and Libby and Mike and I and you have all explained who these electors are. They come from the bowels of the party. They are, in fact, the people who are trusted the most to do this. I was only a little disappointed in that we got a certain amount of mail saying, how dare you not think this is a viable reaction? But we knew what was going to happen, and now we have to decide what we're going to do now that Trump is going to be the president.
Ditto. In fact, what happened yesterday was it was actually Hillary Clinton who lost some support. One guy in Maine voted for Bernie. It didn't take anything away from her. He knew he was going to lose. Several others in Washington voted against Hillary as well. It was largely what the Electoral College has been now for many years, a symbolic rubber stamp after the actual voting in the states.
Right.
And I'm sorry about that. The whole situation did make for a hilarious Saturday Night Live sketch, which went viral. Hillary, did you all see that?
Yes.
But other than that, it had very little effect. And we need to be concentrating on and paying attention to the real assaults on things we care about that are coming in the future.
I agree. The attention now is to for people who are opposed to Trump to be vigilant about fighting him in any way that they can. But the benefit of all the discussion that went on this year, can you remember any discussion about the Electoral College other than it being a perfunctory process that it was largely ceremonial going on at state capitals? I mean, we talked a lot about it. We talked a lot about whether it ought to be revised. I think this will accelerate the effort to have the compact among states for a popular vote, which states can unilaterally agree to give their electoral votes, pass a law that gives their electoral votes to the winner of the popular vote, which is a movement that would not require a national constitutional amendment, which is very difficult. And in the process of all that, I think a lot of people became educated about it, which is good. Did we expect it to be any different? No, but it allowed people to voice their opposition, and it does perhaps signal an awareness that people can make change.
The compact would not have made a difference in the outcome.
If there were enough states in the compact, Hillary Clinton would be the president.
California and the big state where she won major.
No. I'll explain it.
Okay,
New York State is part of this compact where if enough states join the compact, and there's, I think there's 16, I could be wrong, might be 18, who are saying they'll be in it if enough states that would have the majority of electoral votes, and that would kick it in. They all agree to award their electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote. So in a case like...
Oh, the national popular vote.
Yeah, the national popular vote. I'm sorry.
Okay,
that's the
difference.
So it would be a way of just basically fast-tracking a change in the whole way that we elect. And, you know, and there's arguments against this, you know, that small states will be completely cut out of the process, et cetera, et cetera. But now people
are there any red states in the compact so far?
I don't think so.
And is New York a half a red state? Because New York has a perpetually, by hook or by crook, state Senate, which is Republican. You think those Republicans are going to vote for this?
Well, they're only tenuously holding power. That could shift.
Yeah, they've been saying that for the last 40 years. They're only tenuous. We now have more Democrats than Republicans in the state Senate, and still the Republicans hold control. Mm-hmm. Why? Because of a very scary deal between a bunch of well, what's the right word? Traitors from the Democratic
You're
Party.
You're talking about the Independent Democratic Conference.
I am. And certainly aided and abetted, at least up to this year, in my opinion, by Andrew Cuomo and his actions.
All right. Well, I mean, every state is going to have to resolve those kinds of things. And it isn't like it's going to happen. But there's a whole lot more discussion, a whole lot more understanding. Who is it that said yesterday, Rosemary, you said your son teaches eighth grade civics. And now kids are actually listening and talking about it. So there is an
understanding.
There is at least a benefit to this in that people are engaged when it was never anything anyone paid attention to.
Well, I think we saw that in the Times Union editorial. You several times in the course of that editorial said, we don't think this is going to happen, but this is why we think it should.
Exactly. And understanding the Federalist Papers, which are part of the Constitution, and the notion that if a president could be the vessel of foreign influence, he should be rejected. That's an important notion.
The Federalist Papers are not part of the Constitution.
Well, they're an addendum explainer to it. Yeah.
The other thing that we hear talking about is a constitutional convention that Republican-controlled states are thinking of putting together. They actually want to change rules on budgets and abortion and lots of other things. And I can see that happening. I'm fearful of that happening. But I don't see them changing the Electoral College in light of what happened this year.
Yeah, and remembering, folks, this splits both ways. I mean, mm-hmm. I have to ask whether if Hillary had won the Electoral College but not the popular vote, whether we would be hearing from as many people as we're hearing from right now.
I think we would. I think there'd be an awful lot of angry people and it would be very divisive, as is this now.
Now, you know how you get to be an elector. I mentioned it before. You give a lot of money to the party. You're one of the people. And so the more you give, the more your chances of getting – you see where this is going or not? The more your chance of getting to be an elector is – so, in other words, the cost of college is going up.
Well – the Electro College.
Don't you
see?
Yes. All right. Why don't we pause there for a break? And we'll just let that absorb through the pores of all of us. And we'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We've been talking about the electors and the Electoral College vote. We should note that January 6th makes it all official. We were just talking about during the break that one of the things that we've said is that the core of government isn't going anywhere. You have all of these changes, but the people who've worked in government are going to continue to work in government, although now we're seeing that not to be the case.
Yeah, there are reports of a great exodus of federal workers who, frankly, don't want to work for secretaries who appear to be antithetical to the very idea of the departments for which they work. So Department of Energy has been hit, Department of Education. And we had always seen the bureaucrats who keep things running as the political top changes as a safeguard of our systems. I think that may not be as great a safeguard as we had supposed.
Now, was it the Department of Energy or was it there was one department that was looking for the names of employees have advocated for who believed that climate change was real.
Or was that DEA? Yeah. You're right. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
But there are great numbers of resignation. It's been reported in several agencies.
A little discomforting whenever you see a mass exodus, but you can certainly understand it. I mean, if you've been doing it, I mean, even in a bipartisan approach, whoever comes in, if you've been doing something a way for a very, very long time, and all of a sudden you know that is going to be upended and you have a way out.
Well, it's another indication that they're seeing the dismantling of basically their life's work. But what an opportunity this is for Trump. He will be...
He'll be replacing a lot of lower-level people.
Correct.
That'll be carrying out the policy with enthusiasm.
All right.
I had a letter, Joe, yesterday from a person who had given $20 to Hillary Clinton and wanted to know what the chances were that the Trump people would be coming after him for having given $20 to Hillary Clinton. Now, of course, we're talking about millions of Americans here. It's not that that's a thing that I worry about. And I said to him, basically, there are a lot of people between you and your $20 and coming up. But however, what it reflects, Mike and Rosemary and Joe, is it reflects the sort of mass paranoia that is overtaking all of us right now at this stage.
Well, we saw it in the 1960s when Nixon assembled an enemies list and systematically went after people using the IRS and other bureaucracies to make life miserable for the people, the key people, not the $20 donors who were opposed to him when he was seeking political office.
And it's always been so, a family friend was I.F. Stone in my family, and we knew that he was under 100% audit all the time.
Perpetual audit.
Right. For those who don't know who he was a fabulous crusading journalist who just did more to assemble facts and let them know, people know what the facts were. He would read prodigiously and he would let you know. And he had something called I.F. Stone's Weekly, which I think was probably enough to get us on the FBI list, but I'm not sure.
There are those listeners who continue to call us hysterical and paranoid and ranting, but there are so many signs that are troubling. I was talking at the break about Melania Trump's effort to go after this no account publisher in Maine, and Maryland, and she's brought a massive lawsuit and lots of firepower. She's got the same lawyer who handled Hulk Hogan's First Amendment suit, and that was a blast. So we're seeing millionaires going against the First Amendment. We're seeing Trump continuing to go to rallies that are little more than drumming up the base, drumming up and the basis instincts of the base.
That President Obama failed to fuel and warm up the base after he became president. He was too low key. If you want to get programmatic change, you've got to warm up the base and have them put pressure on elected officials.
And just for the sake of devil's advocacy, Rosemary, I think the fact is that if you're going to print something and if you're going to say something, you probably ought to be accurate about what you're saying. Yes, it is true that he's going to be going after the press with everything he's got. There's no question in my mind that that's the case. As you have said many times, the libel laws, he wants to tighten the libel laws. He'll want to tighten the libel laws.
There is no federal libel law.
No, but there could be.
But I don't think he's going to go after the law. I think he's going to do just what we're seeing in the Melania case and we saw in the Hulk Hogan case, which is to bring a ton of money. He's got billionaires backing him. And you bring a case, and that bankrupts the right or wrong, it bankrupts the media outlet. You can go after people
who are making up the news. And in the Hulk Hogan case, there was, you know, there was a case for libel, and in this particular in any event,
that was bad behavior in there. But
bad behavior.
It was a tape.
But
it was actually
true. You can go after legitimate news agencies and bankrupt them in protecting your, you know, in
that's a very good point.
And that's the problem. It's like a slap suit, basically.
And this was a was a blogger. And who was also, then the story was picked up by the Daily Mail, correct?
Correct.
And then, so then both were being sued, and both retracted the story.
Correct. And she's still, how much is she asking in damages?
$150 million.
Yeah. This is not a small suit.
Forget about the $150 million. It's, as Mike says, the $50,000 down to get a decent lawyer to defend you.
Yeah, it's going to put some. It's going. What it will do is it will change behavior, and people will not go out on the limb to tell controversial stories, however true they may be.
Correct. So, I mean, what I think I'm seeing is that in any one outrage that I might bring up, you can say, "Oh yeah, but there's a reason for that," or "Oh yeah, Trump's got to do this," and "Oh, Nixon or Reagan or whoever did something similar." But you put it all together, and that's why we're seeing. The nervousness that you are in me and a whole lot of other people.
Yeah, Rosemary, but the nervousness has to do mainly with what we think he's going to do, what many of us think he's going to do, as opposed to what he's done so far.
Well, he's put together a terrifying cabinet. That's all he's done.
There is no question. He set off a problem with China.
All right, we will return right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain make up the group. It is also time for us to start with our letters. We have several letters that have accumulated, and Alan will start reading those now.
I will do that, Joe. Thanks for the opportunity. William says, how does one go about learning who our electors are? And Joe, you gave a very good answer when I just asked you about that.
If you Google it, and there were several articles over the weekend, major publications, I believe the Washington Post being one of them, that had a list of the electors in every state.
Peter says, panel, as you noted on January 6th, in a joint session, Congress will be meeting to count the electoral votes. There's a process under 3 U.S.C. 15 that authorizes formal objections, must be bicameral and in writing. Objections have been made only twice in the history of this law, 65 when an elector cast a vote for Wallace instead of Nixon, and 2005 when Barbara Boxer and Stephanie Tubbs Jones, joined by John Lewis and Jesse Jackson Jr., objected to all 20 of Ohio's votes. It is anticipated there will be objections this time around to some extent in protest, and there is a Tenth Circuit opinion as of last Friday that supports objections based on state election laws that are coercive in violation of the 12th Amendment. Thoughts? Well, I'll say the same thing. This is not an endorsement, but that is, you know, you may have that, Peter, but you're not going to get anywhere with it. It's not going to happen. Now, symbolically, you may be onto something, but you better write it down. It isn't going to happen that the election's going to be changed. Anybody else on that one? No,
I agree. I think it's symbolic. Symbols mean something. It's not like it's not okay for someone to express their distaste with something.
I mean, I think you could bring this up if you saw great division in the Electoral College yesterday, but you didn't. So yeah. I think that ship has sailed.
You had better believe that the Trump people were on the phone with the electors before they met.
I bet they were.
Yes, they sure. Michael says, I've wondered if he, I assume he means Trump, was surprised as the rest of us were that he won. Gregory says, yesterday several panel members were complaining about the sore winners who gloatingly say, we put up with Obama for the for 8 years, you can, ... Feel free to respond to such triumphalism with the line, I wonder if there were sore winners in the Germany of 1933 saying things like, hey, we endured 14 years of Weimar Republic. You can certainly put up with 1,000 years of our fascist Reich. And that's Greg from Hyde Park.
Humor is a good thing in these trying times. That's pretty funny.
James says, my daughter sent me this statement about Trump from the Net of Light, an international non-denominational religious group. Your country has elected a moi as president. A moi is a boy in a man's body. Mois are big and have loud voices and often mistaken for men. A man thinks of the common good, while a moi has not learned to think of anyone but himself. He's not fully developed and still a child. And then this right.
I'm sorry. Can I
sure,
just
of course.
Jump in? You know.
Sure.
I'll freely admit I haven't fully comprehended all of this yet. But I got a Christmas card yesterday and a letter. You know, the dreaded Christmas letter from the person.
Yeah.
And they were saying that they didn't want to get political, but they were just extremely pleased that this Christmas season Christ would be back into Christmas, and that once again Jesus would be at the center of our government policies. Now, okay, all right. So whatever, but what, where does that
how do you get that out of what
right?
Happened?
How do you get out of that? How do you get that out of the Donald Trump way?
Trump has made a big deal about putting.
Well,
Christ
I know
back
he.
Merry
he
Christmas,
has,
no more happy holidays.
And he has put it on. Yes, he's put it on the signs at the victory rallies and
that,
so forth.
That helped him with evangelicals who gave up, you know, seemingly all kinds of other moral compunctions to vote for him for abortion and pro-life and Merry Christmas. So somehow Jesus' messages is being interpreted as non-inclusive.
Although
so you Jews and Muslims out there, forget about you.
Although no less a person than the Pope himself seemed to be hinting that Trump was not the appropriate candidate.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, everyone co-opts Jesus and says that they are speaking for Jesus and you know,
what
I mean,
would
that's
Jesus
been going on
say?
For 2,000 years, right? And he did. I agree. I mean, I think this was the payback to the evangelicals who held their nose and voted for him.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, but
I,
this seems different than holding their nose. This seems to be like that they believe that there is going to be a fundamental difference. That
well,
they,
well there's
the
no dissonance between you and Mike on this.
In oh, no, words, no, 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 no.
I mean, if he puts a couple of Supreme Court justices who are opposed to abortion and will overturn Roe versus Wade, and if he,
I'm just wondering how the same woman, how the same man who said that we should say Merry Christmas more, which just seems like a thing to say, versus the guy who says that he likes to grab women by the genitals, of how that doesn't somehow cross each other out.
And there still aren't, you know.
Tell me that.
Well, yeah.
Cannot.
And there still are religions that suggest that that marriage is forever, and if you've married a second time or maybe a third time, or God knows what.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
I had a friend on Facebook, I love this, who put out a note saying, okay, say one thing that you believe, one opinion you have that's controversial but non-political. You know, it can have nothing to do with Trump or Clinton. It's hysterical. Like, Mary is not a virgin. Or it's a religious thing. Yes, I'm not attacking a religion. That was just one of the examples. Or Kim Kardashian is intriguingly interesting.
That is controversial.
They're all over the place.
Okay, so that was James.
All right, thank you, James.
Another James writes, WMC has a generous and thoughtful audience. Could the panel spend some time pointing out various organizations as ACLU, Southern Poverty Law Center, that are in a position to do something to raise their profile and educate your audience as an alternative to hand-wringing? Also, how do panel members respond to the endless online petitions in the email for various causes?
That's a good question. I think that the kind of hoopla over the Electoral College changed the elector's mind is an example of this. It was kind of energy consuming and it didn't really accomplish anything. You have to figure out what it is you most care about that might be under attack, that appears to be under attack in a Trump administration. For me, for example, it's press freedom. So I'm giving money and contributing time to Reporters Without Borders and to the Investigative Fund for Journalism. Planned Parenthood, if you're interested in women's rights and women's health, is terribly under attack. NPR and your local newspaper, the Times Union, could use resources.
The Southern Poverty Law Center,
that's fabulous.
The AMAS is a wonderful
ACLU is going to it fights for all constitutional rights, no matter who the plaintiff is, even
or
if they're
the NAACP,
NAACP. There are lots and lots of groups.
And by the way, and we haven't even gotten because you start going after the bigger fish, but we're going to start talking about the effect that this is having on the arts.
Wow.
And individual arts organizations, which we haven't even started to talk about yet as a culture and a society, but you can bet they're going to be under fire, too.
You bet.
Sure.
Okay, dear panel, says Tracy, I held slim hope that the Electoral College would change. We are another step closer to the abyss. Watched the Oprah Michelle interview and cried all over again. Lights are going out in this country. I am so sad. And that's from Christine.
Many people feel that way.
Oh, you bet.
And then there are others who think we're hysterics. So
yeah. The choice for education secretary, says Wayne, is frightening. As a retired New York City teacher for 38 years, I see the attempt to dismantle public education. Thank God I live in New York, says Wayne.
Jerry Brown in California has said, okay, we'll put our own satellites up in the air if we have to monitor climate change, you know.
And Karen says, panel, Trump has not had a press conference since July, and there is every indication that he will not have press conferences, but communicate exclusively through tweets and rallies. Please talk about how this way of communicating will impact the press and the public.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. Other presidents have tried it. They've cut way back on how many times they allow themselves to be questioned randomly. Trump does some one-on-one interviews. I don't know if there are ground rules that are established. You're not going to ask about this. You're not going to ask about that. I that would be interesting to know. But
it doesn't seem that way.
No. I mean, they seem to be hard questions. I'm
looking at that Chris Wallace.
Yeah, the Chris Wallace
interview
one
is the latest
a week ago Sunday.
Example. Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. But he's still cherry-picking how he communicates, and he's not allowing the press corps. And Reince Priebus, who's his chief of staff, has questioned whether they're going to continue the tradition of daily briefings and whether they're going to, you know, honor the White House Correspondents Association, pecking order on who sits in the front, who asks the first question, et cetera, et cetera.
Jeez.
They're trying to just blow up the tradition and reestablish their own, which I think the person who wrote the letter is quite right. You know, it's a lot easier to get up at 6 in the morning or 5 in the morning and tweet and control the news cycle than it is to respond to it.
But, Mike, what's at the bottom of all of this, of course, is that the Trump way is one way. And the press conferences and the morning briefings, those are two-way. And that's the last thing they want.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I think the press conferences are highly overrated anyway. I don't mind if they go away. All that firepower that's sitting in the White House waiting to be given a nugget of information, deploy them elsewhere, stop the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And there was in Mar-a-Lago this week a off-the-record dinner with Melania and Donald Trump and the press, and that should stop, too. No, it's on the record. He's the president of the United States now.
Who attended that?
President-elect.
A bunch of reporters did. No one whose name I recognize, but a number of
what about news
key
organizations?
Outlets. Yeah, news organizations went to that.
You mean like the Washington Post and
New
Times?
No, the networks? No, they're not. No, they would not. The
Miami
mainstream.
Herald?
Nope, but smaller papers in the area did. Mm-hmm. And that has to stop.
That was common 30, 40 years ago.
Correct.
Yeah, that was common.
It's another way to control.
Sure
if
it is.
If it's off the record, you can say anything.
Nelson Rockefeller was famously bringing the Albany Press Corps down to Pocatello Hills and wining and dining them and then announcing some big program. They'd come back and all write big stories about
it. And I have heard, but I don't know for sure, that he also hired their wives and their husbands for jobs, which is another way of
McConnell's wife running transportation, something like that?
Yeah.
So my point is, I definitely agree. He's blowing up the old traditions. He has the right to do that. These are inscribed in tradition, but there's no law that says he has to do it.
Not at all.
The press, yes, we need to complain and keep warning about it as we're doing here, but we need to reconfigure how we are covering this man and this administration.
Well, I think it's problematic because during the campaign, you had the Washington Post doing extraordinary investigative reporting of his business, enterprises and the problems that he had, and you had others like the New York Times and many others who were exposing all kinds of problems that seem not to get any traction and change the outcome of the election.
That is likely to continue. I mean, I work in Eastern Europe where that's just the way it is. You write and then nothing happens, and it seems to go on as corrupt and dismal as it had been. But that is the role of the press, and you know that, Mike. We don't make the changes. We put out the truth and then urge others to act. And that's all we can do, and we need to keep on doing that.
We're going
to
take a break. When we come back, we'll go to some letters, and then we'll get a news break at the top of the hour. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning, and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We do want to get to the stories of the Russian ambassador who was killed yesterday in Turkey, and also to the tragedy that happened in Berlin, where a truck slammed into a Christmas market, and 13 of the latest number, I believe, killed in that attack. We'll talk about those stories after the news break. Before we do, though, we'll go to the letters and finish up on what we've been talking about regarding the Electoral College and other Trump stuff.
Okay. Dear panel, if the Trumps start suing when in the White House, I think a clever defense might include deposing the president. That could backfire, particularly because Trump is extraordinarily vulnerable in that situation. Michael says, panel, since it takes 60 votes to affirm a Supreme Court nominee, shouldn't the Senate Democrats unite against any Donald Trump nomination? After all, the current court makeup is better than adding another life-term conservative. That would be poetic justice. That's from Mike. Anybody want to answer that?
I think the Constitution is clear that the job of the legislature is to fill the vacancies. I think they should look for someone who is acceptable, even though he is conservative.
And how about getting even for the inability?
Well, it would be hypocrisy if the Democrats did exactly what Mitch McConnell did by stopping the hearing, not even having a hearing on Merrick Garland, who is quite a good compromise candidate and in a normal situation would probably win bipartisan support. And if the Democrats turn around and do that, they're going to look no better than the Republicans did. I think I agree with Rosemary. I think
but that was a gamble that paid off, didn't it?
It did pay off.
And so did not filling all the federal vacancies, the federal court vacancies beneath Supreme Court. Those will now be filled with Republicans. You know, it's also a danger for the Supreme Court to be fewer than nine. If it's now eight. If it went to seven, it's much easier for one side or the other, conservative or liberal, to win over a majority. So it's to the advantage of everyone to have a nine-person court.
Well, I'm not so sure you're right, for whatever reason. I think that, you know, sometimes a 4-4 means it stays like it is. That's something to be.
And then the lower courts, which he can fill, you know, will then determine policy and it may not have much of a difference.
Correct. It's fine for now, but
it's a good temporary strategy if you want to stalemate things. But for the betterment of the country, I think looking for a compromise is going to be the right thing to do. You can't walk in there and just immediately oppose everything.
You are not going to get a compromise.
You know, there also is something to be said about that Supreme Court job. Even when stalwart conservatives are put on, they're brilliant men and women. Conservatives are usually men. They do add to the discourse in this country. And it is deeply, at least one half of the country is deeply conservative. So what is the problem with having really smart, articulate conservatives? I don't think Clarence Thomas is one of them. I don't think he's articulate or thoughtful.
Well, the problem,
But the other ones who are on now, the other part of that five in the last court have been really quite amazing people.
Well, but the problem is that whether they're amazing, whether they're smart like Scalia, in the end, they become another legislature. And if you're not going to have the right to have an abortion, for example, it doesn't matter how articulate you are, whether you wear stripes on your, as Scalia did, stripes on the side of your gown, and, you know, and whether you get along with
everybody. That was Rehnquist.
Rehnquist, I'm so sorry. And whether you get along with everybody. I think it's a matter of policy, Rosemary, so I couldn't really disagree with you more.
Well, I think that also one thing in the country I do believe in is that the Supreme Court has made very wrongheaded decisions in the past, and history has overcome that. Dred Scott comes to mind, you know, segregation.
Yeah, but it was bad at the time.
It was bad at the time. And so, I mean, they can undo abortion, but the truth is abortion's not a major thing. It's been on the decline in the United States. It's not a smart way to have birth control, and women will fight back. When I was a teenager, when I was in college, abortion was illegal in most of the United States. Women still had abortions, and it will happen.
Well, that yeah. won't be a good situation.
No, it's
that
not
was
a good
terrible
situation
because they were using coat hangers and they were going in.
No, they were going to places where it was legal and where there were doctors.
No,
who were performing
no,
it.
Rosemary, I'm so sorry.
Well, getting back to the Supreme yeah. Court, Alan, do you yeah. think the Democrats should just dig in and not approve anybody put forth by the Trump White House?
I don't really know yet. Mm-hmm. I don't really know. I want to see who they put forward. If I were Trump, I would put somebody forward who could get some Democratic votes, who would be, you know. But I suspect based on what he's doing in his cabinet, we're not going to see that.
Right.
And then I think you fight like hell. And I think you say no, not till you come up with somebody who is acceptable enough to put on the court.
Well, do you see anyone in the cabinet who will garner resistance from Republicans?
Well, I think the Secretary of State, Tillerson?
Tillerson
is really got a big problem in terms of his conflicts of interest during that thing. I heard a story on NPR this morning, or was it the BBC? But it was a terrific story about how a new oil deposit, oil and natural gas deposit in Texas, is the largest strike anywhere, I believe, Joe. I don't know if you want to, if you remember this, but in the world. And that now, and now they put, you know, the Rick Perry on as the guy who is very pro fossil fuel as the head guy.
Yeah.
So it all makes sense.
The reluctant energy czar.
Yes.
And then there's housing. You know, Ben Carson's. What qualifications do you really need for these jobs?
Well, in those cases, you look to the deputy secretary and you see who that is, because that's the person who's going to be calling the shots, and the White House will call the shots. Trump is awful, says Matt, but can we please stop calling him and his supporters Nazis? Well, I don't do that. To do so is to minimize the singular evil that was the Nazi regime.
Boy, I wish I could think it were singular evil. But the truth is that the kind of genocide perpetuated by the Nazis has been repeated over and over again. It's happening in Syria right now. And the idea that what they created in Germany cannot be created again is false.
And also, we may use the word fascist around here every once in a while, but Nazi is a tough word.
That is a tough word. It remains to be seen. People fear it, but I think to assert that it is there right now is not based in fact.
I am a regular listener, says Brian. I find your topics and discussions to be, as a whole, very stimulating. However, I am very concerned regarding what appears to be one-sidedness regarding political topics, none more so than the news items related to the president-elect. I support varied opinions. Being a bit of a contrarian, it is critical that opposing voices be invited to the table. I don't see that happening. This makes for very lopsided discussions. Well, we do have Rich Honan, and we do disagree with each other. Here on this program. And so I'm a little concerned about what would seem to be a bit of an organized effort here to put this panel down. Because the words all seem to be very similar.
Well, let's take, let's send this out to the lab and check it out. We'll, we'll take a break and we'll come back. We have other things to talk about. It was a very somber, busy news day, unfortunately, yesterday. So we'll talk about some of those stories as well and get your letters as included there as well. So we'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. And very nice to have you with us. As I mentioned, there were a lot of big stories and very sad stories that made the news yesterday. And we want to certainly touch those this morning as we work our way through our topic list. And we'll begin with the Russian envoy, the Russian ambassador to Turkey, who was assassinated in Ankara. He was assassinated in an Ankara art exhibit on Monday by a lone Turkish gunman shouting, "God is great, and don't forget Aleppo, don't forget Syria," and what the leaders of Turkey and Russia called a provocative terrorist attack. The gunman, described by Turkish officials as a 22-year-old off-duty police officer, who we should note was at the front of the room seemingly providing the
the security.
Yeah. He wasn't supposed to be there.
But he used his badge to get in and then was allowed to go up front.
Yeah, he is a member of the
And by the way, I want to point out that that's how Anwar Sadat got killed.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
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 That's right. So it was right behind him. I don't know. I had to have a little internal discussion with myself. Do I want to watch the video? Do I not want to watch the video?
They tell you that it's really disturbing. And it's actually, we're raised on, you know, cowboy movies. It's not that bad.
No. I mean, it's disturbing. It's hard to believe.
I think Mike's point is exactly right. Every kid can tell the difference between a cowboy, shootout and a real thing.
Right.
The real thing is very bothersome.
Well, I have to say that even the picture on the front page of the New York Times was troublesome, and they only took about 15 minutes before they started to defend it and talk about why they put it up. But it shows the gunman behind him with the dead man sprawled out on the floor and him pointing to.
But it was the right thing for the Times to do because there's a difference between somebody reading a line of print about something that happened and seeing it with their own eyes. They know how terrible it is when you do that.
Well,
so as far as I'm concerned, the Times gets a lot of credit for having the guts to do that.
And the other thing too was the pictures of the press kind of cowering in the corner as this guy was shouting and
except for one Associated Press photographer who bravely
shooting it all.
Yeah, went through all
with the camera.
Oh, she just kept going.
And then he was later, as he was exiting, was killed. So the big question, of course, is the implications for the Russia-Turkey relationship, which had been warming recently after plunging a year ago. Not immediately clear, but some analysts play down the notion that the assassination would lead to a new rupture, saying it could conversely bring the countries closer together in a shared fight against terrorism. Vladimir Putin of Russia said on Russian television that Mr. Karlov had been despicably killed to sabotage ties with Turkey. Mr. Putin spoke with the Turkish president by phone, and the two leaders agreed to cooperate and investigate the killing.
The hardest thing for me, and I'm curious to see what you say, is what it all means. This was a guy yelling, "Don't forget Syria, don't forget Aleppo."
Right.
And it was a Russian who was responsible, along with Iran and the Syrian government, for Aleppo and the continuation of the war against Turkey, which has also fought, but fought in Aleppo, but is against the Syrian government, which is part of the problem between Russia and Turkey. It led to the Russian shutdown a Turkish plane last year.
I admit I am freely confused by all this.
But it's what Joe said. I think that the fact is that in fact they want to do this, to repair this rupture. So therefore,
the Russians do.
That's right. So therefore, there are events in history, World War I and others, where somebody gets assassinated and you get a world war. But in this case, that's not going to happen.
I don't understand that either. I never did understand how
the Archduke Ferdinand's assassination.
Yeah, and Sarajevo kicked off. I didn't understand that. And this is the same. It's such an interconnected web of alliances going on here that I find it very hard to follow.
I think you missed my point.
Possibly.
And probably because it was too obscure. But the reason, what I'm trying to say here is if it's inconvenient for the Russians to take offense, they're not going to take offense. They're going to say we have to work this out together.
Right.
That's the important point here. And clearly,
the irony is that it will actually probably hurt efforts to make Russia hold them accountable and responsible for what's going on in Syria, in Aleppo, and by Turkey, by sort of working with Turkey to oppose terrorism, that kind of weakens that whole thing.
Don't you think that it's all over? Don't you think that it's all over? I mean, to me, Assad has now won.
Sadly, it sounds that way.
You know, this is now sort of mopping up at the end, and we have to figure out how to get through it, but it's going to happen. This is a terrible man, by the way. Terrible.
Let me complicate this further. It isn't Syria or Russia that I'm confused about. It's Turkey. This is the third major horrible terrorist activity we've seen in a very short time in Turkey. Who's behind that and why and what does it mean for Turkey? The president, of course, is using it and the coup, an attempted failed coup, as a way to consolidate power. He's more powerful than he ever was.
And the military, by the way, which has always assured the secular part of Turkey, it seems to be on the wane. Wane goes down, right?
As opposed
to
wax. Diminished.
Wane. And it has always been the military that has assured the secular nature, you know, of Turkey. But of course, Rosemary, we don't have to go any further than the great wars between the Shias and the others, you know, to see that even within, you know, a supposed religious construct, it's still possible to hate each other.
Okay, I'm not sure that cleared it up for me, but
no, I'm so surprised.
All right, let's go to letters.
Oh, letters. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Alan. I just want to go one other story that I want to mention, and that, of course, is the tragedy that happened in Berlin yesterday. This was a truck that went into a Christmas market, and it is suspected to be a terror attack. I believe the New York Times is saying 12. Some news organizations are saying as many as 13 people were killed, and wounding dozens when a truck plowed through a Christmas market on Monday night. In a statement, the police added that they were working swiftly with the necessary care in the investigation. The truck jumped the sidewalk about 8 p.m. Near the Kaiser Wilhelm Memorial Church, whose jagged spire, a reminder of the bombings during World War II, is one of the most symbolic sites in Berlin. The police say they later arrested a man near the scene who was suspected of driving the truck, but they're actually not sure of that, and the investigation continues. There has so far been no claim of responsibility from a terrorist organization.
The big loser here is Mrs. Merkel.
Yep.
Because, obviously, she's been doing the right thing all along, trying to say we are not our past, we are not the Nazis, we are better than that, and trying to bring her audience along with her, just as Barack Obama has tried to bring Americans along with him.
But she opened her borders last summer. I mean, you know,
well, that's the whole point.
You know, and she—if it were a Syrian refugee or somebody seeking asylum in Germany who did this, if it turns out that way, that's really going to
hurt
her.
I think it was a Pakistani.
Right. Well, the suspect is Pakistani, but whoever it may turn out to be, if it turns out to have been someone who came to Germany through this refugee program, that's going to backfire for her. And she just recently announced she's seeking another term.
Yes, and then you have, you know, all the, in France, Mrs. Penn, and all of the right-wing guys in Germany. And you saw it happen here, for goodness sakes. That was a big part of what happened in this last election. So so it's really bad news. It's really bad news for Mrs. Merkel, who is, after all, a hero.
We should say the eerie connection to this and the attack in Nice that happened in July, where a truck went into a Bastille Day celebration, 80 people killed in that attack. So
this is a form of terrorism that ISIS has been promoting, and it's online and it's in its publications. Anybody can be a terrorist, just get a big truck and ram it into a
In this
a
case,
party
the truck
revelers.
Driver was the truck was stolen from a, you know, hijacked basically, and the truck driver, I believe, was killed.
Right.
And this terrorist, whoever this was, perpetrator, took it and rammed it into the crowd.
We should note that, and I didn't know this until late yesterday when I was reading about it, that the that there had been in this country there had been several traveler watches and advisories warning tourists to beware of such markets in Europe because that they were believed to be
targets. Yeah. I had a cousin who took one of those Viking River cruises and went, you know, to dozens, really literally dozens of Christmas markets on the route. And just last week we were reading, saying, oh, I wish I could go. That's so great. And then of course, it becomes a target. That's exactly why the terrorists
And it could happen anywhere.
It could be anybody.
It could be.
We were at Rockefeller Center the other day looking at the Christmas tree, and I
too.
Have to tell you,
so did I.
I never saw so many people in one place.
Did you think that? Did
yes,
you think, wow?
Very
yep.
much
but they do
so.
Have the, they do have barricades.
They have barricades,
the
they have the, yeah, the and, trucks of sand, they have the.
Right.
The
I mean, New York City is vigilant.
A lot
yeah,
of machine
except
guns.
That it takes one guy with a knapsack. That's all it takes.
Sure.
To go into a place like that. That's the terror of it. You really can't stop somebody who's willing to
that's
take their own
is.
Life.
That's what terror is. It's the fear.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something, Rosemary?
Well, no. I this just is real personal. It's the reason I'm not afraid to go to places like, say, Jordan, which also had a terrorist attack this past weekend, because it could happen anywhere, in Washington or New York, as easily as in Amman
and
or
then in
Paris or
and Zurich. Right, there was a
Zurich, yes.
attack
yep.
in the Islamic Center in Zurich, where three were shot yesterday as well.
Yeah.
Let's go to the letters.
Yes, Joe. Samantha says, I think the Democrats should absolutely be as intractable and obstructionist as the Republicans have been going forward. Taking the moral high ground has gotten us absolutely nowhere. And let's face it, as far as the Republicans are concerned, whether or not their obstructionist strategy has been terrible for progress and for the country, it worked. The Democrats need to do something that works. I must say, I have some sympathy for that. I know you guys don't, but I have some sympathy for the idea that you just can't let them do that to you and say, all right, the court would have been this much if we had followed the Constitution. We didn't do it, and now we should bend over backwards and help them. I don't see it.
Well, they risk being hypocrites. I mean, you know, you have to take, you know, the Michelle Obama line in the Democratic Convention was, when they go low, you go high. And then they hit you right in the stomach, I guess. But
right. And have you seen, I mean, is there any indication that the Democrats taking the high road has paid dividends, and that the people who took the low road are saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't have done it that way?
You yourself, Alan, repeatedly say two wrongs don't make a right.
Yes.
And that's what we're saying.
Well.
And the government as a whole will suffer if we both start fighting with guns.
Okay,
right now
okay.
they say, you know, Republicans have a gun, Democrats have a knife.
Well, I mean, Chuck Schumer, who is the Senate minority leader, I guess, or, you know, the Democratic leader, is shrewd. And I think that he needs to leverage all the power that he can muster, you know, with the—
He will with the court.
Yeah, you know, with the court and just with major legislation and even approval of some of the cabinet members, too.
I doubt he's going to be that assiduous with that. But I want to ask Rosemary a question. Okay, so let's just say the Russians, for one— come in and they go into some of their old territories and they take over, figuring the Baltics. We've never come back against them, and they're a bunch of softies. They're not going to do it, my friend. Are you telling me two wrongs don't make a right? That you don't have to oppose them?
I do oppose them.
No, but that the United States, in terms of its use of military, doesn't have to oppose them when they go taking over, for example, even NATO countries.
That's not a Democratic Party decision. It's a U.S. government decision. And the government that we have put into place appears to be pro-Putin, and I suspect won't do anything. And, yeah, we do. We have to go along with that.
Well,
just like we did with the invasion of Panama under Reagan.
Two wrongs. Or the liberation of Grenada.
Yeah, the liberation of Grenada. Remember that little war?
Okay, we don't agree on that.
This is not a unique period.
Marmy Don, somebody doesn't agree with you. Okay. Joanne says, good morning, panel. Rosemary posed the question as to the role of the media going forward. Perhaps the New York Times and Times Union should keep a running list of Trump's lies, publishing the most recent top 10 on the front page each day. This way, trends and commonalities could be garnered over time, and when he runs for election again, the entire nasty list can be available online for readers to see in black and white. We need to keep track of the demagogue.
The New York Times has been keeping track of who he attacks on Twitter. That's pretty interesting. It's a couple of pages long right now.
Ryan, Alan, don't tell Rosemary how women were getting illegal abortions when she was in college. I'm sure she knows exactly how her classmates ended pregnancies. Yes, Some were using dangerous methods to self-induce, but surely many were going to places where it was legal or paying top dollar to doctors willing to perform them, just like in countries like Brazil today. One of the problems with the illegal abortions is that they remain safe and accessible to wealthy women and dangerous, inaccessible to the poor. And I couldn't agree with you more, Ryan. That's that last sentence.
Well, no, that is actually true. And they were clergymen at Syracuse University who were helping girls get abortions.
Yes, but his point
is that it's only I could afford it, or my friends could afford it because we were going to college and we're not poor. Absolutely.
Mike says, why should Dems play nice when GOP got rewarded for stonewalling? Does the typical voter really appreciate the hypocrisy, or will it always devolve into false equivalency? They're all bad, regardless of who's really avoiding compromise.
Well, I don't think Democrats are going to just bend over and let anything happen. I think that they just have to be surgical in how they oppose things, and they have to look for areas that they can compromise on and get something that they want.
Well, one could only hope. And for those of us who think, based on the picks in the cabinet, that this guy, Trump, is not out for compromise, one could only say it's unlikely that you're going to find compromise when it comes to the Supreme Court of the United States. All right. Barry says, Nazis are, quote, distinguished as the worst perpetrators of genocide in history. Yes, there have been many genocides before and since. Some mass killings are against political opponents. Think Syria, Cambodia. Others for racial tribal group, regardless of politics, Rwanda, Kosovo. But the Nazis singled out one main group and other smaller groups for organized technological mass extermination. This is an outlier in all respects, both in numbers and proportions. Casual use of the term Nazi diminishes this distinction. Mike says, I appreciate what you guys do, but you're kidding yourself if you think the show isn't completely one-sided. Thank you very much for that, Mike. And Joe says, good idea for the off-the-record meeting with the press. Make it a rule. Okay, it'll be off the record unless you tell a lie, Mr. President, and then we can print our hearts out. If he says no, we've caught him, says Joe. Priscilla says, I think we have elected Bannon president. In Trump, he found a perfect vessel and mouthpiece. Trump has no attention span for policy. Chaos money, Bannon is in charge of that. Look at the cabinet. Amy says, any comments on Trump rejecting Secret Service protection in favor of private sector personal security? Does he get to do that when he's president? I don't think so.
I think they're debating that right now. And actually, the Secret Service doesn't have such a great record under Obama. I sort of understand it. If he can pay for better, why not?
Patrice says, hi, panel. I work PT at a mail domain, read old white guys, big box store. And I have heard several times since the election from workers and customers, now I can say Merry Christmas after trying to come up with a non-argumentative response. I finally came up, and soon we'll have to learn to say it in Russian. And Samantha, no, we did that.
All right. All right. We're going to end there. That's it for our what? We got them all in, so that's good. So we will stop there. We'll be back tomorrow for another discussion. Alan and Rosemary and Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll be back after this short break.